Football Weekly is on the air.
Vic halts momentarily, looks to his left, throws, and it's going to be intercepted on a tip. Back to the 20, back to the 30, and there goes Patrick Robinson with nobody between him and the goal line. Down to the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown. A 98-yard return of the interception by Robinson for the touchdown.
Ben in the shotgun, gets the snap, he's back, big rush over the middle, the pass is complete. Wallace loose in the secondary, gets the block at the 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, Steelers touchdown. 51-yard touchdown, Ben to Wallace.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Bears and Texans square off in Chicago. Eli and the Giants look to get back on track at Cincinnati.
How fragile is the coaching bubble in Nashville, and can the Giants turn it around? What is going on with the Dallas Cowboys?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And Hub, let's start with senior editor Nolan Nowrocki, as we always do. Nolan's beat this time takes him to the Dallas Cowboys, where last Sunday night the scene had to be almost surreal, with Jerry Jones, the owner and general manager of the team, trying to get into the post-game locker room, and the door was locked on him. And if you were there to witness that, Nolan, that had to be one for the ages.
Yeah, it definitely was a scene. If you look at what's wrong with this Cowboys team, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned. I think most of the problems start on offense, and Jason Garrett's got to find a way to simplify the game plan. He's been an overly cerebral coach, comes from the Ivy League. I think he has a tendency to overthink the game. His game management has been highly suspect. There are a lot of reasons why you could say that this team is underperformed under Garrett's watch. There's even other reasons with the talent as well. I think that the move of Tyron Smith from the right side to the left side has been an average decision. You look at how he struggled on the left side. He was one of the best in the league on the right side last year, and this year he's definitely underperforming. And you got a lot of problems with the receivers as well. Dez Bryant, Kevin Ogletree, Miles Austin, there have been way too many missed assignments. The effort has been questionable. A lot of drops. Just a very inconsistent performance from the receivers this year.
Well, and I guess the punchline of the whole story, or the whole issue that flared up this week, Nolan, is that on his own radio show, Jerry Jones apparently made the comment, and I quote, "If I wasn't the owner, I'd fire me as GM too." Well, what sense does that make? He is the owner, you know, and if he's acknowledging the problem, is he just saying to his fans, "You're stuck with me and this is what you're going to get"?
Pretty much. I mean, if you look at the talent on that roster, I think he's done a pretty good job. I mean, it's hard to argue with DeMarcus Ware, and obviously Bill Parcells had something to do with the nucleus that they have right now. But there's plenty of talent there right now. I think what they really have to find a way to do is just simplify things. Dez Bryant cannot handle complex route trees. He's got to have a very simple plan for him. Same thing with a lot of the talent there. Miles Austin, there was a reason he wasn't drafted coming out of college. He was an immense talent, but, you know, the mental side coming from the small school ranks was a big concern. And there are pieces there to really be successful, but I think they need to find a way to get a coach in there that can really maximize them, or Jason Garrett's really got to change his approach.
Isn't this the trick of the NFL, though, Nolan? Matching talent with coaching, or coaching matching up with talent, one way or the other. If you don't fit the two together, you don't win regardless of how much talent you have, right?
Absolutely. And if there's any downside to Jerry Jones having so much influence over picking the players, it's that they may not be bringing in the most intelligent players. I think that's what Jason Garrett's system needs. He needs discipline. He needs intelligence. I don't think they have it on that roster.
All right. Thank you very much, Nolan, once again, for the work on that story. Associate editor Kevin Fishbane joins us. New England Patriots made a trade deadline move. They picked up troubled cornerback Aqib Talib from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is going to be interesting, Kevin. This is Bill Parcells stepping out there. He has not been able to solve his problem in the secondary, has he?
No, he hasn't. It's been a problem for a couple of years. You look back to 2010, Wayne, and Devin McCourty had a great year as a rookie, you know, great ball hawking skills, but we haven't seen that before. They've even moved him to safety, and that's one of the reasons that they've made this move is because they think that McCourty might be better for them at safety at times, assuming he can't get back to what we saw a couple of years ago. Talib is physical. He's, you know, got good ball skills. We know what he's capable of on the field. Obviously, a little troubled off the field. He still has one more game under suspension, and Bill Belichick taking a chance. It sure didn't work last year when he took a chance with Chad Johnson and Albert Haynesworth, but this is kind of a different situation in terms of the talent level that Talib has for a unit that really needs it.
Well, and Kevin, it's also a younger player probably just getting ready to come into his prime as opposed to these veterans that he brings in. And I guess the question that has to be answered here is his problems have been off the field. He's a great talent. Will he pick up the system quickly, and is Belichick's scheme in that secondary something he can pick up quickly enough to be the instant factor that they need?
Yeah, I think that is a big question, Hub. And you know, one of the things, you talk to people who've watched this team play and watched the corner play, they go, look, if he's good, if he can stick with his receivers, if he can go after the ball and not make penalties, it's going to be fine. You know, obviously, you know, they've had a lot of problem with the safeties, and they think that McCourty, who's a pretty smart guy, it fits actually better for them in the back end, and that might work out well. So, you know, they're going to have to keep an eye on if Talib can stay disciplined, but Bill Belichick might, you know, he's a smart enough coach, obviously, to maybe make things easier for Talib and to say, look, here's the guy you're covering, stick with him and don't make any penalties.
Let's continue, Kevin Fishbane, associate editor, with this talent thing and matching up talent to teams. You know, one of the big free agent acquisitions of the season last winter was Mario Williams moving from Houston over to Buffalo, the great defensive end. Now, you know, you've got to take a look at what he's done so far this year, and it's been disappointing. What's the story in Buffalo over Mario Williams, and how much of a mixed review is he getting?
Well, when you talk to, well, if you talk to Buffalo fans, they're already writing him off as a bust, and you talk to a couple people that will watch that team on a daily basis, and there's a lot of disappointment with what's going on, but it seems there's different consensus around the league. Some people look at Houston last year, clearly they were fine without him, but you talk to other people, say, look, he's still an incredible talent, and he's making, you know, giving up plays for the rest of his teammates, he's still getting pressure on the quarterback, and the wrist injury, you know, a lot of people said that once he got this surgically repaired, this was gonna be what could get him back to what we're used to, but the problem for Mario Williams is there's just not a lot of talent around him on that defense either. So, you know, clearly people expect a lot from him, and he has been disappointing. But I think some of his excuses might have some legitimacy going forward.
Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane, stay tuned. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It Adams when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And from that staff, associate editor Dan Parr, who's been following the story in New Orleans involving coach Sean Payton. The NFL voided the contract extension that Payton received in September of 2011. According to reports, Payton would be a free agent after this season now. He is suspended for the year for his role in the Saints bounty program, which was run from 2009 through 2011. Now, there was a clause in Payton's contract that would have enabled Payton to walk away from the deal if general manager Mickey Loomis was suspended, fired, or left the New Orleans organization. Okay, where does all this put Sean Payton? Is, in fact, Dan, he a free agent after this year? And how logical are these rumors that he's just going to pipeline up to Dallas and take over the Cowboys?
Well, if it's determined that Sean Payton's contract did not toll for a year when he was, in other words, did his suspension also suspend his contract? If it's determined that that is not the case, then he would be a free agent after this season. So far, Sean Payton has said he intends to be back with the Saints. Mickey Loomis, who's 8-game suspension ended this week, said, you know, he absolutely expects Sean Payton to be coaching the team next year and says the contract issues will be resolved. So everyone's trying to throw water on the report. But the fact is, we don't know if Sean Payton is going to be coaching the New Orleans Saints or not right now. This team had, I don't know, I guess about 6 months after they knew that the contract had been voided to fix that issue and get him signed and finish off that deal. They didn't do it for whatever reason, and hasn't been a real clear explanation as to why yet. So, yeah, he's being linked to the potential openings that might open up in Dallas and Philadelphia. You know, a lot of talk about would Jerry Jones and him work as a team, with Jerry Jones continuing to make the calls on personnel there. So there are more questions than clear answers right now for Sean Payton.
Well, and the biggest question to me is, why would Sean Payton leave an ideal situation? I mean, here the guy is vilified by the league office and around the league, and yet he is the biggest saint, no pun intended, in New Orleans. You going to go for that aggravation in Dallas and Philadelphia? I know that he's getting divorced and his son goes to high school in Dallas, but NFL head coaches don't see their families during the football season anyway. So I don't see the logic behind it.
Yeah, he's got a great situation in New Orleans. I think he would acknowledge that. Does he want to see what else is out there and test the market, drive up his price if he can? I'm sure he'd something that would interest him and intrigue him. But him and Mickey Loomis have, you know, apparently so tied together that he wanted a stipulation in his contract that he could leave if Mickey Loomis was suspended or left the team. So we know that these two are very close. And we know owner Tom Benson has been very loyal to Sean Payton throughout some pretty embarrassing things this in the past, a little under a year that some of these developments have come out about the Bonte situation and really put a black mark over the whole franchise. So it's a situation where Sean Payton has tasted the very best of the NFL since he became the head coach of the Saints. Worked out very well for both sides. Why would you walk away from that? That is a good question, Hub.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We welcome in Arthur Arkush, associate editor on the Tennessee Titans. Boy, Arthur, sounds like the heat's being turned up on head coach Mike Munchak. Bud Adams all over him after that loss to the Bears last week.
He sure was. You know, a 51-20 loss at home will do that, and it wasn't the first time. The Titans are getting simply blown out, a margin of defeat, of almost 22 points per game. So number 8 scoring defense in the league last year, dead last this year. They don't seem to have a lot of answers on either side of the ball. The heat is being turned up on Mike Munchak, but we hear it's even hotter for coordinators Chris Palmer and Jerry Gray.
Well, and Bud Adams has been known to experience hyperbole before. He certainly can go off. He's volatile. And yet in this case, Arthur, it's not just Bud Adams. When you get embarrassed at home like that, even though you're only partway into your second season, you got to realize that something is not working right.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's kind of the nature of these defeats. Like I said, they haven't been competitive in all but one of them, and they seem to be searching for answers, unable to find any. I think it is worth noting that some people think Bud Adams needs to look in the mirror, too. It was his offseason meddling that some believe really put his Titans behind the eight ball. They wanted to go out and get another pass rusher, get some interior line help. The options they found in Steve Hutchinson and Cameron Wimbley haven't been good enough, so he probably deserves a little bit of the blame as well.
All right, thank you very much, Arthur. Senior editor Eric at home, Philadelphia Eagles. More news from Philadelphia. They made it official on Wednesday, putting offensive right tackle Todd Harriman's on the season-ending injured reserve list with an ankle injury. Boy, this leaves their offensive line in total disarray, doesn't it, Eric?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've lost 3 starting offensive linemen. Just so happens they're 3 best offensive linemen, too. I mean, Jason Peters was just a really tough blow. It doesn't look like he's going to be coming back. Jason Kelsey was a really underrated element of the team at center. You know, Dallas Reynolds hasn't been bad, but there's a drop-off there. And then when you lose Harriman's, a guy who played right tackle well, he could have filled in any of the other spots. You know, been so many injuries, everybody thought maybe Harriman's would slide around. No more. He's done for the year, not coming back. So, you know, the depth keeps thinning out. I mean, you can understand why Andy Reid wanted to draft offensive linemen every year, but they simply don't have the talent and depth up front to operate the offense they want to.
Yeah, most people have trouble fielding a starting caliber offensive line, period. It'll be tough to turn that thing around in Philadelphia without those linemen. We'll be back with the games after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Packers, Cardinals, Browns, and Skins all enjoy a bye week. The Indianapolis Colts and Jacksonville Jaguars got the weekend started on Thursday night, but with our airtimes on the weekend, we stay with the Sunday and Monday night games on Pro Football Weekly. The AFC West division leading Denver Broncos step out of the AFC for a matchup with the 2-6 Carolina Panthers this week. The Broncos are really coming on as an offense. I mean, Peyton Manning has thrown exactly 3 touchdown passes in 5 consecutive games. Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker have combined for 872 yards and 9 touchdowns in the last 5 games. The Broncos are also starting to hit stride defensively, ranking 10th overall, and Von Miller had 3 sacks last week against Cincinnati. Now, for the Panthers, I would think part of the problem is their quarterback leads the team in rushing. Cam Newton has 347 rushing yards, 100 more than the next highest total on the team, running back D'Angelo Williams. Somehow,
on this level for whatever reason, it's never good when your signal caller is your leading rusher. The Panthers are 20th overall offensively. The San Diego Chargers step out of the division to visit emerging Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers have averaged 36 points per game in the last four games. Rookie running back Doug Martin off the charts in week 9. Team record 251 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. My goodness, if you had him in fantasy football, you probably just won your league on that one performance. But that was a 42-32 win at Oakland. Martin has averaged 7.8 yards per touch in the past four games. Also red hot, and this should not be misinterpreted here. It's not just the running game, it's a quarterback. Josh Freeman has a touchdown to interception ratio of 11-1 in the past four games. Suffice to say, the Chargers do not have a signature win yet. The combined record of the teams the Chargers have defeated is 7-18. Phillip Rivers at a TD to interception ratio of 4-5 in the past three games. Ryan Matthews yet to rush for 100 yards in a game this season. This is a strange matchup, Hub. Chargers 26th offensively. Buccaneers are 29th on defense, but they're first against the run.
Wayne, the Tennessee Titans are going to visit the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins, of course, coming off that really disappointing loss at Indianapolis last week. Just when they were on a roll, they could have moved in a commanding position in the AFC wildcard chase. Actually, even they're right there tied with the Patriots, but the loss drops them to 500, and now they get Tennessee. Anybody who saw any of the Tennessee-Chicago game last week would ask yourself, how can the Titans play with anybody in the NFL? They're struggling on both sides of the ball. The real key here could be for Tennessee to have a chance. They're 24th in the league running the football, but Chris Johnson is averaging 131.5 yards rushing. Problems, the Dolphins are third in the league defending against the run. It was their pass defense that was exposed a little bit in Indianapolis last week, and Matt Hasselbeck, at least in his last two games, has not shown the ability to overcome that, with the Dolphins at home a huge favorite over the Tennessee Titans. Now, talk about huge favorites. Also, the Baltimore Ravens will be at home against the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders, you know, they've won a couple games. They've been competitive. They came back late last week against Tampa. But at the end of the day, you look at the stats, they're not doing anything particularly well. Carson Palmer's piled up a lot of passing yards in garbage time. Oakland is 7th in the league passing. Baltimore just 22nd versus the pass. But here's the stunning thing about the Ravens this year, Wayne. 22nd against the pass. You'd say, well, they must be good against the run. They're 28th versus the run. People are running all over the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of that, obviously, because Ray Lewis isn't there. But the Raiders, in spite of having run DMC, Darren McFadden, they're just 31st in the league rushing the football. Here's a couple numbers that should scare Raider fans. Baltimore has won 15 straight at home. Their last loss to a non-divisional opponent at home was in 2009 to the Colts. It's obvious why the Ravens are such a big favorite in this one.
Well, Hub, an NFC West matchup brings together the best and the worst of the division as the first place 6-2 San Francisco 49ers meet the 3-5 St. Louis Rams. Niners defense has not allowed a touchdown in four of the last five games. At Arizona 2 weeks ago, quarterback Alex Smith was as good as he gets. 18 of 19 passing, 232 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he registered a 157.1 passer rating. Michael Crabtree caught a team high 5 passes, 72 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns. The Rams allowed a season-high 473 yards in a Week 8 loss, second straight game allowing more than 400 yards. The Rams failed to register a sack in Week 8 after making 15 sacks in the previous three games. This is a matchup of a Rams offense that's 28th against the Niners defense, which is 6th in the NFL. That tells you pretty much all you need to know about this mismatch.
Wayne, Monday night, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to visit the Pittsburgh Steelers. We understand why the schedule makers did it at the start of the year, but you look at it now, Steelers rounding into shape, playing their best football of the year, and the Kansas City Chiefs, well, they're just bad. That's all there is to it. Nobody understands why they're this bad. Romeo Crennel is not a horrible football coach. There's a bunch of talent on the team, but they haven't shown up. A lot of it's been the quarterback play. Matt Cassel has not played as badly his last two outings as he did earlier in the year, but he's only playing because Brady Quinn got concussed when he was given the starting job. And there was a big move this week. Romeo Crennel fired himself as the defensive coordinator. You don't hear that one all that often, but he said he's got to rely on his head coaching duties on the sideline. And so Gary Gibbs takes over as defensive coordinator. Now, Gary Gibbs has done this before in 2006 through 2008 in New Orleans. That didn't work out so well. They fired him. They brought in Greg Williams. They started going to the playoffs. So can Dibbs turn the defense around? Can the Chiefs show up and be competitive against a Pittsburgh team that's playing really good football right now? We shall see. But again, it's clear why the Steelers are such a huge favorite.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend on Pro Football Weekly.
Football Weekly is on the air.
We resume with this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly along with Hub Arkish. I'm Wayne Larrabee. The NFC East division-leading New York Giants, coming off a disturbing home loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers, hit the road to take on the Cincinnati Bengals this week, Hub. And, you know, the one thing about the Giants, everyone kind of assumes they'll just be there and they'll be playing their best football in January. It doesn't really matter what they're doing now. But there is some concern in the Giants camp that Eli Manning has been struggling at quarterback a little bit the last 3 weeks.
Well, there's real concern. And at the same time, you have to temper it with something that I think was overlooked. And I know I missed it, and I'm mad at myself for it now. But last week in particular, just 125 yards in that, disappointing late loss to the Steelers. That's not Eli Manning. That's not the Giants. But we focused on the Steelers traveling on game day, allegedly because they couldn't get a hotel because of Hurricane Sandy. I just wasn't even thinking about the impact on the Giants who lived there. The number of players who were out of their homes. Eli Manning was in a hotel all week because his home had no power. Other players had flooding, serious damage. And you know, it's funny, when Katrina happened, it was such a massive disaster that the whole world focused and the Saints became a focal point of that. Well, with Sandy, I'm not sure a lot of us still realize how devastating this has been, albeit to a much smaller segment of that population. But it clearly impacted the Giants. Now, as far as the Bengals, Marvin Lewis calls out his quarterback Andy Dalton, his middle linebacker Ray Maluga last week. We talked about it the way we hear it, to lead better, to play better. And so they blow a fourth quarter lead at home to the Denver Broncos. I just think that the Cincinnati team is a middle-of-the-road team that can beat up on weaker teams. But when they've got to get in with somebody like the Giants, I think that the worst thing that could have happened to them was the Giants' performance at home last week.
And because they were a playoff team a year ago, everyone expected Cincinnati to get better this year and take the next step, and it so far hasn't happened. Meanwhile, the 3-5 New York Jets are coming off a bye, and this week they are in Seattle to take on the 5-4 Seahawks. Bart Pasterna has the story.
Bye week time has just been swell for the New York Jets. Backup quarterback Tim Tebow was the subject of trade rumors. Starting QB Mark Sanchez was questioned incessantly about his impending reunion with Seattle's Pete Carroll, his old college coach who told him to stay in school instead of entering the NFL draft a few years back. And then a periodical poll of NFL players tapped Gangrene's Rex Ryan as the league's most overrated coach. Then again, maybe all of these distractions are a good thing for the Jets, because the football on the AFC side of Jersey hasn't been too good. Although to hear Sanchez tell it, you'd think his team was just a celebrity girlfriend here or there from leading the division.
How close are we to 5-3 or 3-5 or, you know, 4-4, wherever we could be? We're right there looking at, you know, some of the film this past week and really where we've broken down in some of these games, leaving some points on the board and hurting ourselves.
And that's not good, because Sanchez's Jets are in Seattle, where the Seahawks are tough birds to bring down. Rex Ryan points out that rookie opposing QB Russell Wilson is extra dandy in the Pacific Northwest.
A stat that really jumped out at me was this young man's quarterback rating at home is 120, and that would lead the league as the best home quarterback rating in the National Football League. So as good as the running game's been, there's also a lot of real positives in their passing attack, and that's an obvious one. And then another one that jumped out at me, if you look at the last five games of Seattle, this young man has a quarterback rating of 154 on third down.
In reality, the kid keeps his team in contention by minimizing the miscues, making Marshawn Lynch feel the love, and eating up enough clock to keep one of the NFL's top defenses fresh. Although Coach Carroll wants a little more of the focus from his D.
We have to get better at the fundamentals. I think we've lost sight a little bit of really digging into the basics of it. I mean, that's the most fundamental things about footwork and stuff that keeps you from getting in bad situations. And we've been trying really hard. Our guys are busting their tails, but we're not as sharp as I'd like to see us.
Well, Coach, the way your opponents have been playing lately, a sharp cheddar, let alone a sharp defense, may be enough to stop the Jets. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Oh, Wayne, I gotta tell you, any week in which we get a report from Sir Barticus Pasterna is a good week for me, and you have to take it tongue-in-cheek with a smile to cover the New York Jets right now. But here's the key to this football game. Jason Jones, defensive tackle for the Seahawks, has been limited the last couple weeks. Teams have gashed them with the run, particularly Adrian Peterson last week. Look for Sean Green to get the workload, to be the horse, and if he can be effective, the Jets can stay in this game. It's not about the quarterbacks, it's about ground and pound, and the Jets keep forgetting that.
All right, two NFC North teams heading in different directions as the Detroit Lions
move over to the Metrodome to take on the Minnesota Vikings. You know, the Vikings a strong start, but we talked about Eli Manning struggling at quarterback for the Giants recently. Christian Ponder's been struggling for the Minnesota Vikings, and thus the fact that Adrian Peterson has had a tremendous year rushing the football. The Vikings have slowed down a bit. Meanwhile, the Lions, after a terrible start, are starting to put things together. They reached the break-even point last week.
Well, it's funny. We were talking off the air a little while ago, and we both instantly said the same thing to each other. Lions are getting better. We knew there was too much talent on that team. Now, they're just 500, but impressive win at home coming from behind against Seattle. Then they go down and pound the Jaguars the way they should. A lot of talent on that team, and not surprisingly, it's getting better because they're starting to run the football. Now, you know, you look at the other side, Vikings, great start. Adrian Peterson, one of the best stories in the NFL, but the Vikings are going in the wrong direction. You kind of got to like the Lions in this spot.
All right, stay tuned. More breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this Week 10 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Two troubled teams meet in Philadelphia as the Cowboys and Eagles make one last stab at making a playoff run. Well, Hub, we've already talked about the Eagles' problems on their offensive line. They're going to be missing three starters the rest of the year. It's hard to turn around anything if you don't have your people up front. And as far as the Dallas Cowboys go, boy, there's a lot of intrigue always abounding about this football team. But bottom line is they've lost a lot of games down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think you're almost being too kind when you say troubled, almost tortured teams here. And you look at the situations. Now, as we discussed in the way we hear it, I don't see how it gets better for the Eagles. You got four of your five starting offensive linemen done, and you got DeMarcus Ware coming in this week. You can blame Michael Vick all you want, but he's running for his life. The only answer is to make LeSean Shady McCoy the focus of that offense and pound away with him, and for whatever reason, Andy Reid has been reluctant to do it. As far as the Dallas Cowboys, I don't think it's that simple. I'm going to disagree with my lead talent evaluator, Nolan Naraki, a little bit. I don't see all the great talent in Dallas. I think they got a lot of guys that people think are good who are really just average, and the guys who are supposed to be their stars, the Miles Austins, the Dez Bryants, they're just not getting it done. So, it'll be an interesting football game. The winner at least stays in touch with the Giants, assuming the Giants don't get upset again. But for the loser, this is it. This is the ultimate must-win situation.
Hub, the New England Patriots are coming off a bye week and play host to the Buffalo Bills in a traditional AFC East Division matchup. Our preview is provided by Mike Petralia.
One thing always seems to be certain when the Patriots play the Bills, wild momentum swings at the beginning and ends of games. And more often than not, it's the Patriots who come out on the winning end. On September 23rd in Buffalo, the Bills raced out to a 21-7 lead in the third quarter, only to have the Patriots run off 38 straight points en route to a 52-28 victory. Last year, it was the Patriots who shot out to a 21-0 lead in Buffalo, only to lose 34-31 on a last-second field goal. Then on the final week of the season last year, it was the Bills who jumped out 21-0, only to see the Patriots run off 49 unanswered points in a season-ending win. Pats quarterback Tom Brady is well aware of the history.
It's been some different types of games with this team. Like last year, we were down 21-0 here, and I don't know what that final was, 52 unanswered or something like that. And it was the same thing, you know, down 21-7, and then we win kind of going away there, you know, at the beginning of this year. In our first game last year, we were up, whatever, 21 points, and they came back and won. So there's been some kind of wild swings, you know, and I think that shows the inconsistency that we've played against them, and hopefully we can go out there and play consistently for 60 minutes.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick says the Bills will make the Pats pay dearly if they're not careful.
Just they got enough guys that if you're sloppy around them, Bird, like Arizona was, you know, take a couple away and turn a game that looked like Arizona was going to win into a Buffalo victory. And it just doesn't take much. They've got a very explosive offensive and special teams units, and they take the ball away on defense and create big plays on that side of the ball, too. So if you're not alert and you're sloppy with them, they'll make you pay.
Patriots are a perfect 10-0 all-time against the Bills at Gillette Stadium, the site of this weekend's game. In New England, Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, and I keep waiting for the Patriots to take off. I still really like the mix of youth and veteran players they have, you know, which is different from what Bill Belichick has done in recent years. I look at Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower on defense, and now Aqib Talib, and you plug them in with Brandon Spikes and Gerard Mayo and Vince Wilfork. I think this defense is going to get a lot better, but they've got to start their run now. As long as Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback in Buffalo, this isn't about Mario Williams and all the money on defense. I just don't think the Bills can contend, but this is a key game. If the Bills can stay competitive in this one, they'll make this a race right down to the end of the season.
Hub, a great rivalry in the NFC South matches the unbeaten Atlanta Falcons on the road at the New Orleans Saints, who've won three of their last four games. Hub, a lot of people aren't real impressed with Atlanta, but hey, they haven't lost yet. And meanwhile, New Orleans is a team that is getting better as the season's gone along. They just had an avalanche of issues to deal with going into the campaign.
You know, I'm going to put a little different spin on it, Wayne. I'm very impressed by Atlanta. I just don't trust them. I keep looking at what appear to be some holes on that depth chart. You know, particularly they don't defend the run very well. And until Michael Turner exploded last week, they weren't running the football very well. Now, if Michael Turner is back, if he's going to have a big second half, that's huge when you look at what this team can do in the ground game. But as well as the defense has played, I struggle to trust them. They did a great job on goal line defense last week. I'm sorry, that was the Saints, not the Falcons. But I mean, you know, the Falcons have also had their moments, but they've just got to prove to me that they can be more stout on a consistent basis. As far as the Saints, a great job on goal line defense last week against the Philadelphia Eagles, but the defense is still dead last in the league. I know they've won three of their last four. If the Falcons have got a problem spot, if they're going to get knocked off, this would appear to be the spot in New Orleans. I just don't trust that Saints defense enough.
Stay tuned. The headliner is coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Two of the best in the NFL get together Sunday night in Chicago as the 7-1 Bears play host to the 7-1 Houston Texans. Lawrence Holmes previews our headliner.
Sunday night football this week is a marquee matchup of two 7-1 teams, the Houston Texans and the Chicago Bears. Throughout the season, the Bears defense has been stifling, scoring 7 touchdowns off of interceptions, which is an NFL record in 8 games. But Lovie Smith knows that it'll be more difficult going up against a Houston offense that has a lot of weapons.
Special wide receiver, Andre Johnson. They have a well-paid quarterback who's a very good player, makes all the right decisions. So they, passing game-wise, they have a good tight end. They just, their offensive line does a great job. They get off the bus running the football.
A couple of interesting storylines to this game, including former college teammates J.J. Watt and Gabe Kareemi going up against each other when the Bears are on offense.
Great player. Played a lot against them in, at Wisconsin, and he's doing well over there. And I'm, you know, always happy when a Wisconsin guy's doing well, but now I get to block him. So now, you know, he had to, you know, can't do well against us, obviously, but I always wish him luck.
Watt has been fantastic this season with 10.5 sacks and maybe even more importantly, 10 passes defended. It'll be up to the Bears offense to try and figure out a way to get passing lanes for Jay Cutler and Brandon Marshall. On the Texans side, they want to continue to run the ball with Arian Foster and find ways to get the ball down the field with Owen Daniels and Andre Johnson. Gary Kubiak knows that that won't be easy against the Bears' top defense.
I think they have 28 turnovers defensively. They're the best in the business and well on their way to some records.
One of the most effective players on that Bears' defense is Charles Tillman. His wife is getting ready to have their fourth child, and he told me that he could miss Sunday's game.
I'm having another girl, so Monday for sure. But if she comes Sunday, well, I think I'm going to have to be at the hospital Sunday. So I hope she stays in.
Baby Tillman is expected on Monday, but could come earlier. If Tillman does miss the game, he does it with the blessing of his teammates and his head coach, Lovie Smith. In Chicago, Lawrence Holmes, Pro Football Weekly.
Well, Wayne, I got to tell you, I don't think either one of these two clubs is the best team in the NFL or even in the NFC or the AFC, but they are two of the best teams, and this is a legitimate heavyweight fight. And what's really exciting about it is a lot of similarities between this team. You got these two teams. You got 1-3-4 defense and 1-4-3, but you got a Julius Peppers, you got a J.J. Watt, you got a Peanut Tillman, you got a Jonathan Joseph, you got an Andre Johnson, you got a Brandon Marshall. I mean, everything about it on both sides of the ball, both teams trying to do the same thing. This is just going to be a physical punch him in the mouth, and the one that punches harder is going to win.
Yeah, Chicago and Houston in Chicago. The Sunday night game, our headliner in the NFL. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner featuring Pro Football Weekly's in-house handicapping expert, senior editor Mike Wilkening.
Well, Wilkie, welcome back. And you know, we knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. It's been an incredible year for the sports books because they tend to take more action from the favorites, and the favorites have been getting hammered until last Sunday.
Yeah, the favorites struck back, and in a big way for the betting public in Week 9. 10-4 against the spread. You had some road favorites that were well backed, that did very well, the Broncos and the Bears and the Lions among them. You have odds makers from all sides of the spectrum saying that this really was a week that was very unique in terms of the losses that mounted on that side of the counter. So there were some bettors. If you liked favorites earlier this year that probably didn't do well, if you played your cards right last week and your parlay cards specifically, you probably did quite well in week nine.
All right, Mike, now I've only got about 45 seconds left, and this is an unusual week because you always join us in the segment for the game of the week, but this week your pick is actually on the game of the week.
Yes, I like the Chicago Bears. They're my pick of the week. And look, when you look at the NFC-AFC games this year, the NFC has clearly been the better side to take overall. They're 23-13, the NFC, against the AFC this season straight up. And this is essentially what this is. This is a referendum game because the spread is so small. We're talking about Chicago laying a point at this point. Look, I think the Bears and Texans, you know, are pretty equally matched teams, but I just think Chicago at home, given the dominance of the NFC and given the form that the Bears are in right now, this is the right price to take a team like Chicago at Soldier Field. I like the Bears in this game.
Well, Mike, thank you. And Wayne, you know, it's very interesting. The standard method of operation with this is that the home team gets 3 points. Well, here, Bears are only spotting one. What that tells us is, in spite of this great defense, apparently the public still likes Houston. The Bears have got to get some respect.
Yeah, absolutely, and that might be a good time for them to do it either this week or next week at San Francisco. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, when visiting with our handicapper, Mike Wilkening, just now, something occurred to me, and if you think about it, it's really pretty strange. It has been an incredible season for underdogs in the National Football League, and we've had some teams, like the Minnesota Vikings, like the Miami Dolphins, certainly the Indianapolis Colts that nobody expected to be competitive, who have been very competitive, and yet maybe that is now starting to change as some of the traditional powers come on. But here's the thing that intrigues me. As well as the underdogs have done, nobody believes in the really good teams. We just talked about the teams with the second best record in the NFL, Houston and Chicago. Everybody's waiting for them to fail. Nobody trusts the Atlanta Falcons. They're undefeated. Nobody thinks they're going to be the real deal. We're still looking at the Baltimore Ravens in spite of their injuries and assuming that the Steelers are bouncing back now and waiting for the Patriots. In the NFC, I'm not so sure the Green Bay Packers aren't the best team, but they're so banged up it's ridiculous. I love the 49ers, and yet they've played two really bad games. For some reason, the teams that have done the most to earn our respect just aren't getting any this year.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Steelers and Saints Radio Networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.